And welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast for BlankPageBeatdown.com. My name is Shah Shaheed, and I am your host today. On this episode, we're going to be discussing an incident that occurred on the sets of Padmavati, directed by Sanjay Leela Bhansali, starring Ranveer Singh, Deepika Padukone, and Shahid Kapoor. Joining me today on the show is Samarpita Datta from BollyBrit.com, sharing her views and discussing this incident. Word of warning before we get into it, there was a situation in the beginning of the show during recording where, yeah, it happens. I'm not perfect, but I screwed up a little bit. So you're going to catch a bit of that in the beginning. So just wanted to put that into context for everyone so you don't just assume we're unprepared, even though the fact that I screwed up shows a little bit of unpreparedness, but that's okay. Everyone makes mistakes. We're all human. That's essentially, you know, you admit it, you move on. That's what makes me super awesome, because you know I am. So without any further ado, let's get right into it. This is episode 26 of the Split Screen Podcast featuring Samarpita Datta. It's been 5 minutes, okay? Relax. It wasn't that bad. Calm down. Yeah. You be okay. Quiet. Didn't happen. Just zip it right back. Okay?
Okay, let's start again.
Yeah, okay. All right, so welcome everyone to this Split Screen podcast, the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. My name is Shah Shaheed, and I am your host for the show. This is the show where we usually compare two films, one remake from another, and kind of dissect and analyze it. However, today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. We are essentially reacting to a certain incident that occurred on the sets of the Sanjay Leela Bhansali directed movie Padmavati, and how it affects sort of a bit of a format of this show. Today I will be joined by the gracious Samarpita Datta.
Hi!
And we're going to take you through that incident and kind of break it down a little bit. But before we start with what happened and why we're talking about it, the reason why I want to discuss this incident is because it ties into directly why I wanted to create this show. If you've heard other episodes, you know that this show essentially, my idea was to take, you know, a movie that was remade from anything else, a book, comic book, TV show, whatever it is, or another movie, and how that remake kind of stacks up with the original. The reason for that is, you know, I've had a lot of discussions with people, and, you know, I don't read. As loyal fans will know, I'm not a reader. I try to read as much as I can, but I fail most of the time. But I've always found conversations with people that read the original source material of any, you know, movie adaptation about how the book was better, or the play was better, or the TV show, comic book, whatever. And I find it really hard to, you know, convey the sensation of the fact that, you know, a book can be 600 to 1,000 words, but a movie has to tell that same story with a very limited, you know, kind of format. The medium is very restrictive in what it can show and what it can do versus a book or a play or anything else. So, and I find that disconnect of understanding that anything that you make into a movie has these restrictions, has certain things that need to be changed to suit the medium itself. I think that there's a lot of people that don't understand that. And one of my goals with creating this podcast was to talk more about that and essentially bridge that gap of understanding that while, you know, the original source material can be great, the movie might not be perfect, and at a lot of times we always talk about sometimes the source material is always better, but there is kind of a reason behind why things are changed. And I feel like this incident is very crucial to understand that, you know, adaptations have limitations. Are they justified? Are they not? That's kind of what we'll try to get into today. So, Sam, I know you said you were following the incident from day one. So let me give a recap to people listening who might not be aware of it. I know I've had a lot of people tweet me when this happened, kind of going, do you know what this is about? Because a lot of Bollywood, like Twitterati, celebrities have tweeted about the incident, kind of, you know, showcasing their voice and their reactions. But it's very out of context. Have you found that? That it's very sort of like everyone's just like, sad to hear what happened, you know, hashtag Padmavati. And I've got people quoting that going, what are they talking about? So...
Yeah, I found that too. It's just like, oh, SLB is a great filmmaker. Hashtag I stand with SLB.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, where are you coming from? Okay,
yeah.
That's good, but what are you trying to say?
I support him too, but what are we talking about?
Yeah.
So for people that are kind of in the same boat of not knowing what's going on, what are we talking about? Essentially what happened is, so first of all, a little background on the movie Padmavati. There is an episode earlier where I discussed this at length, so I'll try to keep it brief. Padmavati is the follow-up to Bajirao Mastani by the same director, Sanjay Leela Bhansali. It stars Deepika Padukone, Shahid Kapoor, and Ranveer Singh, three very mainstream, famous, awesome actors all together. This movie could easily be, I think, the most anticipated Bollywood movie of not just this year, but probably the last 2 years since post Bajirao Mastani. So this movie is all about essentially it's a period piece set in, I believe, like 1300s or something like that. And the whole story is about how this Muslim king, Alauddin Khilji. Damn it, every time.
You know, when you say Khilji, it sounds like Khujli, which just means itch.
I think that's where I keep going. I think that's why I'm. It's more of a familiar word for me. So Khilji, Alauddin Khilji, is a Muslim king or emperor at that time, who essentially sees this Rajput Hindu queen named Padmini, played by Deepika, and essentially falls in love with her. And to get her, quote-unquote, I can't put that in any non-derogatory way, but essentially to seduce her or want to be with her, he essentially ends up waging war on her kingdom to try to, I guess, you know, make her his or as a conquest or whatever the case might be. And that's essentially what the movie is about, this massive sort of, you know, rivalry between kingdoms, all because the king wants to, I don't know, do the queen. I don't know. It's weird. But the cool thing about the casting and the story, what's interesting is the queen is played by Deepika Padukone. The king is her real-life boyfriend, Ranveer Singh. And the weird twist is that she has a husband in the story played by Shahid Kapoor. So, amazing cast, amazing director, potentially amazing movie. But what happened recently is when they were shooting the film in Rajasthan, a couple of days ago, I believe it was the 27th of January, 2017.
Yeah.
A group of people, members of the Karni Sena, which is a Rajput organization, part of the Sri Rajput Sabha, essentially invade the sets of Padmavati, started causing a lot of havoc and carnage, destroying equipment, destroying the set, and ultimately ended up attacking the director, Sanjay Leela Bhansali, who was on set, over basically what their perception of it is some objectionable portrayal of the Hindu Rajput queen Padmini in the movie, which they claim is not historically accurate. Specifically, their objection is with a alleged love scene or a song sequence showing some sort of an affair or love between the Muslim king played by Ranveer and the Hindu queen played by Deepika. That is essentially what the beef is, you know, because, you know, Hindus beef. So that's what the problem is. thank you. So that's what the problem is. That's what the protest was about. And there is a video out there of the incident. Like, you actually see the people coming onto the sets and attacking, you know, the director and, you know, destroying things. I mean, personally, I found it to be a disgusting video. I think it's in really bad taste. Usually I will, you know, link show notes of what we talk about on these shows on my site. But this is not a video that I'm going to link to anyone. I don't want to make it accessible for people to watch. I don't think it's in good taste for anyone to be watching that sort of thing. But it did happen. It is out there. And so that's essentially what we're going to talk about today, about what kind of precedent this sets and how this happened. Sam, you said you were following this as it was happening. How did you feel about this whole thing?
So I got to know about it through Twitter. You know, people started tweeting about, oh, I stand with SLB, etc., like I mentioned earlier. And I was like, I was basically a bit confused as to what exactly was going on. And then, you know, then the media started covering it, and there was a video that was released. And that video is quite disturbing to watch, because it's essentially people, and I'm assuming that people have watched the video or will do after your episode's out. It's quite a disturbing video to watch. You know, people just storm onto the set, start harassing the crew, physically assaulting them, and then a whole bunch of these people get together and start physically assaulting Sanjay Leela Bhansali. They destroyed equipment, they pulled his hair, they even slapped him.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, first of all, this is a man who has significantly contributed to Hindi cinema, and this is a man who has significantly contributed to Indian culture as a whole. And also, I mean, if you take into account the wider, South Asian culture is based a lot around respect for
Your
elders,
elders, right?
basically. Yeah, elders, right?
Yeah.
And this is a man who's in his late 50s, early 60s. I
Something like
mean,
that, yeah.
yeah, something like that. So these are, and a lot of these people that went on, that stormed the sets were, you can see that they're all in their 20s.
Oh, yeah,
So,
they're young
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, they're young kids. They've probably been brought up with the, and obviously it's mob mentality, so they all just start, doing whatever. But the fact that they were assaulting a man who's a good 40 years older than them
Right.
is, is disrespectful in and of itself. But then, I mean, they're getting their arms up about a character, a so-called scene that they have heard about happening in a film about a character that may not exactly also have existed.
Now, to make it clear as well, none of the protesters are involved in anyone in the movie. No one, none of these protesters, none of these organizations that are protesting about the movie have even read the script. They don't really know what's in the movie, how the depictions are going to be. The movie hasn't even finished shooting yet, so it's not even like they're seeing dailies. I don't even know if Bollywood movies do dailies or not, which is the concept of, every day shooting, the film gets sent back to the studios and someone is watching, to make sure it's on track. So I mean, yeah, so none of these guys are involved in the movie itself. This is just all based on, some sort of allegation or supposed alleged scene that.
I think it was just a word of mouth. Like, have you heard blah blah blah? Someone said something, and then it got passed along, and then obviously Chinese whispers, the story grew.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, in terms of, like, just to add on to your point too, I mean, in terms of, excuse me, personally, I don't find any relevance to, excuse me, I don't find any relevance to, if someone contributed to the Hindi cinema industry, or not. It's just, that's not something you do to any decent person. Like who does
No,
that? Like
no,
who like you don't
no,
like
of
something
course not,
someone's
no.
doing, you don't go and start, get a bunch of your friends and
Beating them up, yeah.
And obviously, again, I'm simplifying it. Obviously, I'm oversimplifying the situation. There is political motivations and agendas at work here. But it just ultimately, when you boil it down to the reason why this happened, like, there's no reason for this to have happened this way. And I have sort of ideas about why this escalated to this point, but we will discuss that later. Since what we're talking about, since this incident occurred, there has been a resolution that's been reached between the two parties, between Sanjay Leela Bhansali and essentially the Rajput Sabha, the Karni Sena that they're, associated with. The Sanjay Leela Bhansali Productions have sent a letter to the president of the Sabha, which is Thakur Sab Shri Giriraj Singh Ji Lotwara. Again, I apologize if I ruined it. Please don't come to my house and destroy shit. So, I mean, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase the letter. It doesn't make any sense, but essentially, they've put it in writing that, and they've clarified that there is no, I'm quoting verbatim now. This is to specifically clarify that there is no romantic dream sequence or any objectionable slash romantic scene between Rani Padmavati and Alauddin Khilji. See, I'm reading it now, right? So, so again, quoting from the letter, we have been carefully researching and making the film. We're confident that Mewar will be proud. Mewar, Rajasthan, where the queen is from, will be proud of the film made on their revered queen. We don't want to hurt any sentiments, and would appreciate if all the social organizations and local people support us in making this film and making their queen revered by the world. Blah 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 blah. We request that you don't cause any more problems, because et cetera, et cetera. I'm paraphrasing. So this was the email sent by Shobha Sant, which is the CEO for Bhansali Productions Private Limited. They did get a response back from the Rajput Sabha, which is again sort of disturbing in and of itself. But here's what they say, and this is the craziest part. This is what I feel sets a really terrible precedence. They've in their letter, they also state that, yes, number one, you can't have any intimate scenes in the movie, even in dream sequence. You can't distort any historical facts of the episode of Rana Rawal Ratan Singh, Shahid Kapoor's character, Padmini, Deepika, and Alauddin. Now, they pronounce it Khaleesi, is how they spelled it.
Oh,
So,
that letter,
whoa.
I was laughing at their terrible, like, grammar.
Right,
Grammar's
right.
terrible.
And they even put a kind of a post de facto clause saying, even in the future, if any films are produced on the life of any historical or national heroes, the facts on record should not be distorted.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Okay.
So I mean, ultimately, it's kind of crazy that this happened, and obviously, and everything is in writing. Bansal's gotten everything in writing. The Rajput Sabha gave everything in writing, and essentially, they had to explain to them. So after this, since after getting assaulted by this group, Bansal had to go back to them and essentially, explain his perspective of, hey, guys, please calm down. Nothing's happening like that. We're being very respectful. Please, please, please don't screw up our production and please let us shoot. And these guys are like, okay, cool. If you do follow these, point form things we've mentioned, then you're good to go. And I mean, I find that to be a little crazy. So I'm like, what is your reaction to the, I mean, and this is a solution now. Like, everything's cleared. There's no, everyone's good to go. Shooting will resume or probably has resumed already. And this is how they resolve the situation.
Well, first of all, I don't think anybody needs their film to be cleared by anyone before making it. I mean, especially a religious group. I mean, unless you're making it on a living person who is actually still alive, I think anybody can make a film about anyone. It doesn't have to be restricted. And who are these people to stop Sanjay Leela Bhansali? It to basically tell Sanjay Leela Bhansali what scenes to put in his film and what not to put. I mean, it's his interpretation of events. And these people existed how many years ago now? 500 years ago?
I don't even understand dates. So, I mean, they're
Yeah.
supposed to have been in 1303 AD. Now,
Okay.
just to kind of respond to your, when you said that the movie is his, Sanjay Leela Bhansali's depiction of events. So, essentially, I mean, from everything we know, so like I said, I did an episode where I dove deep into this. You have some first-hand experience that we're going to get into later. But
Yeah.
according to Bhansali and everyone involved in the movie itself is based on Padmavat, which is a poem written in the year 1540 AD, which is
Yeah.
roughly around 200 years after the supposed existence of these characters, by a
Yes.
poet who essentially. Now, the poem is supposed to be a fictionalized version of the supposedly historic siege of Chittor by Alauddin Khilji. Damn it. So I mean, so the poem itself is supposed to be a fictionalized version of events 200 years after they occurred. The movie Padmavati is supposedly based on this fictional poem. So already we have an adaptation of a movie being based on a poem that already is a fictionalized account of the true events. So
Yeah.
I'm not seeing what the problem is if we're agreeing that the poem is a fictional account of the story. I mean, we'll again,
Yeah.
like I said, we'll dissect a little bit
Yeah.
later about, if she existed or not. But it's just a little crazy that, that someone beat someone up and the person, the victim essentially, is having to go to them, hat in
And
hand and
appease them. And
right.
appease them. Yes. Yes. And can we also add, apparently, an eminent historian tweeted on Twitter after the incident
Yes.
saying that the poem which mentions Padmavati was the first instance of her being mentioned at all. So there were
And
no historical records of her existence before
right.
that poem existed.
Right. So I mean, so let's get into the actual the movie itself. So apparently after this happened, there's some rumors swirling around about the fact that the name might be changed. And essentially, like we talked about, the major objection these people had was the fact that the movie wasn't portraying historic facts as accurate, or they were quote unquote suppressing or distorting historic facts. Like you mentioned, the character of Padmini, the Rajput queen Padmini, a lot of people, including the historian you mentioned, S. Irfan Habib, claims that there's no record of Padmavati in anywhere in history, to the
Yeah.
point that even Javed Akhtar, for example, has tweeted that Padmini is a fictional character written for the purposes of that poem, Padmavat, similar to Salim and Anarkali, who are also fictional characters from movies and other stories.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now I mean, like I said, from based on my research, I find, again, things are, like, in these instances, the characters and the incidents are so old, it's really hard to kind of find a consensus of if this person existed or not. But Sam, I know you have some sort of firsthand experience. You were in India recently, and you have some firsthand experience about, you know, Padmini, the queen, and the place and things like that. Did you want to kind of maybe enlighten us with your perspective a little bit?
Yeah, so even though there are, you know, historical records that sort of cast dubious light on whether she existed or not, there is a sentiment in Rajasthan that she was most definitely someone that existed. I went to Udaipur last year. Udaipur is in the Mewar region, which is where Queen Padmavati actually, you know, lived. And the capital used to be Chittorgarh, and it became Udaipur much later. But there's a palace complex in Udaipur, which is called the City Palace, and they have a sound and light show every evening. And I've been to that sound and light show, and they go over the history of the entire region, the kings, the queens that reigned, etc., etc. You know, they depict like major historical events that happened to the region, and they have this like an almost 5-minute section on this incident of Queen Padmavati and her being a true Rajput warrior queen, not warrior queen, but a true Rajput queen that, you know, sacrificed herself before sacrificing her honor at, you know, so there's definitely a sentiment of, you know, this is us, this is our Rajput culture, and this is our queen. And this is the story they're telling every foreign tourist or every tourist that comes along to that region. So even though there is like speculation that she may not actually have existed, the locals there definitely believe that she did.
So they have a very proud sort of they're
very proud. Yeah, the Rajputs as people, and they're famous for this because historically, whenever you had invaders, foreign invaders coming into India to invade the country, obviously the region, they'd always have to go through that area, through the Rajputana. That was what it was called before. And so all the kings and queens that lived there kind of became warriors by default because they're the ones that always were trying to be sieged or captured or whatever. So that's why they became warriors, and that's why they have this proud tradition of having been warrior kings and queens. And, you know, they developed weapons and there are so many forts in Rajasthan. And so because of that, there's this proud tradition of having, you know, having been proud, very skillful and honorable warriors. Yeah.
So from their perspective, like from the experiences you had, essentially, not only do they acknowledge that or stand by the fact that she was a real person in their history who did exist, but they're also very proud of that. They're very
proud of that. Right. And from what I've been reading about Padmavati, apparently she originated from Sri Lanka.
I haven't seen that anywhere in anything that I've read.
That's no, it was actually one of the article links you sent me.
Oh, was it? Oh.
Yeah.
Damn. Comprehensive research here at Split Screen Podcast.
No, she is of Sri Lankan origin, and apparently Shahid Kapoor's character, I forgot his name. There you go. That's my memory for you. Married her in a...
Right, sorry.
Rahul Ratan Singh.
Rahul Ratan Singh or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he married her in a swayamvar in somewhere, but essentially she's from Sri Lanka originally.
Oh, that's interesting.
I find that very interesting that, like, it's also, I mean, it's a good thing because it shows you that back in those days, they would accept someone who was clearly from a different country altogether. But
especially into a culture like, you know, like the Rajputana, you know, Gharana sort of a household, and be so proud of her after the fact, too, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. So, yeah, but, yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, so essentially, back to what I was saying before, originally, they have this very proud culture of being very inherently proud of all the previous historical figures that have existed in the past.
Now, did you find in any of your experiences, in any of these stories, did you find any sort of I don't want to say concrete, but any like beyond a reasonable doubt, or some sort of like legible, you know, quantifiable story or incident that kind of shows, that kind of makes you go, oh, well, that must have been real, or, oh, I guess there may be some basis in reality here. Or did you find the whole thing to be more like propaganda, historical sort of, you know, pride stories kind of a thing?
The thing is, I feel like if I had gone to Chittorgarh, I would have probably had an experience that would have, you know, kind of made me believe that they existed. But I didn't go to Chittorgarh. I was only in Udaipur.
Right.
So Chittorgarh used to be the capital, right? And then became Udaipur, like, much later, after, like, this whole Padmavati, you know, committing Johar incident. But
just to also let people know, because again, like I said, I know we discussed this in early episodes, but the Act of Johar, if you just let people know what that is, essentially.
Oh, yes. So the Act of Johar is traditionally when a woman commits suicide.
Nothing to do with Karan Johar. Nothing to do with Karan Johar.
Oh, yes. No. Karan Johar has nothing to do with this.
We're not talking about Alia Bhatt's career and doing Johar. That's not what we're talking about.
No, Johar is the principle of sacrificing yourself before sacrificing your honor. So now, it's quite similar to, Japanese warriors committing suicide before being attacked or taken by the enemy, so they die honorably. So this is similar to that, wherein, you know, the story goes that Padmavati and 1,000 other women were at the risk of being besieged by a Muslim king.
Right.
And religious sentiment as it was in those days, they would much, much rather die than be taken hostage by a Muslim warrior or a Muslim king.
Right.
And that
Sam,
would be...
spoilers, please. Come on.
I'm sorry, but everyone knows this by now anyway, especially because
the movie's not even out yet. Come on. So here we are talking about if she was real or not. But
yeah,
what it comes down to is, like, I mean, this is why I wanted to discuss this incident. Even if you have, so let's, I mean, for the purpose of this conversation, let's say that Padmini was a real person. Let's say maybe she didn't do exactly the sort of things that history has attributed to her. Or the incident didn't play out exactly how we want to believe, or the Rajputs want to make you believe, you know, as part of the tourist spiel. But let's say these were all real people that existed in that timeline. Ultimately, isn't there some sort of, I mean, there's a lot of debates going on in this incident about, you're talking about freedom of speech, artistic, you know, license and creativity, artistic liberty to change certain things, you know, out of context. I mean, there's also a lot of, you know, as per my research for this episode, there's a lot of chatter about the fact that the only reason this is an issue is because you've got, you know, a story depicting the Muslim invasion of India and the fact that, you know, it was a Muslim king taking over and, you know, potentially having a situation with a Hindu queen. But those are elements and concepts of politics that is way over my head. I don't know the proper history of India. I don't know the current political atmosphere between the Hindu and the Muslims to even comment on stuff like that. So I'm going to stick to the stuff that we know about, which is entertainment, adapting stories, real fiction, creativity, that sort of stuff. So in this scenario, do you think that there is a limit? Like, if, let's say for the sake of the movie, they do change things that aren't historically accurate, that are considered quote-unquote distorting historical facts. Don't you think when it comes to adaptations, there is a certain, you know, some sort of liberty that filmmakers have to do to do that, to make the story make sense in that context?
Of course, there is. And also, it comes down to how the screenplay is written. For instance, there are so many, you know, if you're adapting a book, sometimes a scene may read well on paper, but it may not translate to entertainment on screen. So you have to modify that scene to make it more dramatic or make it less dramatic, or however you want to portray the film, right? Like, for instance, I mean, I kind of know this is deviating, but at the same time, it's sort of relevant. But in Harry Potter, in the climax of the seventh book, Harry Potter and Voldemort just
Spoilers for people that haven't seen or read Harry Potter. My God,
sorry, these books are 20 years old. Okay.
You're just dropping the spoiler bombs today. Jeez. If you haven't read Harry Potter, mute the show for a few seconds and then we can come right back. There.
This,
go on, Sam.
This isn't a spoiler. This is just relating. Anyway, so Harry Potter and Voldemort are just just like circle each other. I can see how that, you know, when you're trying to make a film, that may not necessarily be the most dramatic scene to see on screen.
Right.
So they adapted it and they made it different, and they made it the way they wanted to, so that it would be the way it would basically be a more dramatic interpretation of the movie, of the film, of the book.
Also more interesting visually too, right? Because when you read something and you watch it, there's a huge difference in terms of, you can't just watch two people stand by beside each other talking for 20 minutes. Like, that's not a good visual story.
No, you can't. You can't. So that's another thing. And also, Sanjay Leela Bhansali always adapts... At the same time, sorry, I'm kind of like, my thoughts are really jumbled right now, but when you have a movie which has lead stars, so this is more the marketing side of the film.
Right.
Right? So Deepika Padukone and Shahid Kapoor are being cast together for the first time in a film, right? And there's also the chemistry between her and Ranveer Singh, who is her boyfriend in real life. So there's a certain amount of, like, you know, commercial value in that as well.
Now, do you think that's where a lot of the rumors came from, though? I mean, because it sounds to me like when you first hear about this, like, for example, when you first hear about, ooh, boyfriend and girlfriend cast in the same movie, you know, there's certain expectations. And I'm sure the fandoms even expect there to be at least one scene of this on-screen couple, so off-screen couple, to have that. And I mean, and I feel like that's where these rumors are coming from, because I've heard certain statements from these religious organizations that have said that despite what their real-life relationship is, there should be nothing like that indicated on screen.
Yeah, that was in the letter.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying that I feel like this is just kind of, like, you know what, it almost feels like there's those guys from those sabhas sitting around listening to, reading pinkvilla.com or missmalini.com and coming up with their own sort of conjecture of, oh, Deepika and Ranveer in a movie together, there has to be some hot music song in there. I gotta tell my bosses, we gotta do something about this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's where this kind of train got out of control.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, they were totally acting on rumors or things that they heard about what could possibly be in the film, not what is probably in the film.
And it's also, and it's also on the heels of the fact that there was a news report a couple of months ago that say that Ranveer and Deepika share almost like no scenes together in the movie.
Yeah. That's been, I think they've been speculating that since the beginning. So that news was out even when there was speculation about who was going to sign the film. So this is before the cast was officially announced, that the character of Khilji and the character of Padmavati have no scenes together in the film.
You know what I want? You know the best way to combat this situation? I want the fandoms of Deepika and Ranveer, or what is it, Deep Veer or something? Is
that Deep what Veer, the ship that's is? Right.
See, I learn things. I pay attention when you guys talk. I want the fandoms, and again, this is why I'm putting this out there. I want the fandoms of Deep Veer to essentially start like a change.org campaign or something, or write emails, or, you know, the group that protested, the Karni Sena, they have a Twitter handle, people. So I want the Deep Veer sort of fandom to get in touch with these guys, and you should be upset about the fact that they're not in a scene together. You should be campaigning for them to have a love scene together, because I think that would be the most appropriate response to this. You have two opposing people, devoid of religious sentiment or political agendas, but just a fandom that wants to see this couple on screen together again. Why not? But getting serious though for another second, I mean, it's just, I find it really silly, because it's like, you haven't seen the movie. You don't know what the portrayal is going to be. I remember the only sort of equivalent incident that I can think of in Hollywood that was, I mean, not at all close to this, but I remember when Mel Gibson was doing Passion of the Christ. You know, obviously a controversial topic. You've got the leader of, you know, one entire, you know, religion being depicted on screen by an A-list filmmaker, an A-list mainstream Hollywood movie. And I remember that in order to kind of, you know, handle expectations before the release of the movie, he screened it for members of the clergy, Catholic people, Jewish, you know, like clergymen and, you know, member, like religious figureheads of those appropriate religions, just to make sure that, you know, no one had an issue or that there was nothing. But this was again after the movie was completed. So
yeah,
I don't see why that situation doesn't apply in this case at all. Where when the movie's done, show it to us. Like, these people can say, hey, listen, before you release the movie, show us what you have so we can sign off on it. And that's not an unreasonable request, I don't think.
No, it's not an unreasonable request. But then the thing is, the culture is very different, isn't it? I mean, you would. This is clearly a group that's devoid of any logic whatsoever. Because, it's true. Because you know what? Why would they act on information? Why would a logical person act on information that is hearsay? And then go and storm a set and physically assault someone unless they're actually devoid of logic? Wouldn't they want to have, like, contacted the filmmaker first and confirm it in writing or in person by talking on the phone or whatever before just oh my God, this is really bad, and then going and, like, hitting people?
Now, I have a question for you, because this incident, I mean, it feels like it's this never-ending sort of saga of, you know, outsider or niche or you know, special interest groups finding some sort of beef with the Bollywood film industry. So I have to ask you, how much of this escalated issue, this getting into essentially a scuffle with the director, how much of these do you think that these people were emboldened by the situation that happened with the Pakistani artist ban, where the situation, the threat of banning Adil Hemushkil or banning Rais caused the film industry essentially bow their head in front of the people involved and apologize to them? How much of this do you think was a direct result of that, of those situations?
I think it was very much influenced by that, to be honest, because the thing is, you could see that the government, the Maharashtra state government, was almost bowing down to a political party that wasn't in power at all, right? So clearly, it sends the message that the government is not going to take a stand whatsoever or buckle down on those sorts of people. So it emboldens them, pretty much, doesn't it?
Go ahead.
No, it emboldens them. And so they probably thought they could get away with whatever the agenda they had in mind.
And I mean, I just, again, I'm still reeling from the fact that you have a group of people that illegally assaulted someone, caused destruction of property, which in any country, by all accounts, is illegal. And yet there's no charges, there's no sort of repercussions, there's no consequences. Instead, the victim is having to apologize for provoking the incident, like, or reassuring the people that assaulted him that, guys, don't worry, it's okay, like, I won't do anything to piss you off. Like, I just find that incredible. And the fact that, like you said, the lack of any sort of intervention from the government in any of these situations. Like, I remember we talked about the fact that the incident with Karan Johar's Adil Hemushkil set a precedent, a dangerous precedent. And I personally think that we're seeing exactly, like, the results of that precedent happening now. And I'm just wondering what happens the next time someone wants to make a historical movie based in, you know, real life story. What happens next time? Does someone get upset and someone goes into someone's house and attacks them again and is justified? And people will apologize to that person saying, hey, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it? Like,
I definitely think this is something that has, it's kind of almost solidified a precedent where people from these sorts of fringe groups or even radical groups will think it's okay to just go and vandalize sets or kind of physically assault people. I definitely think it set a precedent. But can we also mention the fact that this is not the first time Sanjay Leela Bhansali has gotten into trouble for allegedly distorting historical facts? Because there was something similar that happened with Bajirao Mastani as well.
Yeah, so I remember Bajirao Mastani had a thing too. Where, again, had a problem, right? Like, in that case?
Yeah, the family had a problem, and then there was some historian, I think, that got involved and was all up in arms and wrote an open letter as well to Sanjay Leela Bhansali saying, oh, you've distorted historical facts, etc., etc. It wasn't anything as big as this, obviously, and it wasn't extreme. You know, it didn't include, like, physical violence. So this is not the first time this has happened, but every incident that does happen does sort of send a message to people, doesn't it? This kind of incident, it sends a message that filmmakers are vulnerable and that they're willing to kind of bend over backwards to make sure that their film is produced without any hassles whatsoever. And I also think, I know I'm going to sound really cynical here and this is wild speculation, but I do think some money must have exchanged hands for this group to suddenly be like, you know, just take their hands off it.
I mean, I don't discount the possibility of that definitely happening. I know that was definitely the case with the Pakistani artist band. Because that seemed purely motivated by monetary or at least publicity reasons. But coming back to this, I mean, let's say everyone's motives are pure. Like, again, just taking everything at face value here, just because that's the kind of guy I am. But do you find an obligation, or do you think there's a responsibility on the filmmakers when they are adapting a historical or something that's a real life story? Do you think there is a responsibility on the part of the filmmakers to stay true to the historical facts, or do you find that they can? Is there a limit to what they can change? Like, what is the responsibility do you find the filmmakers that want to do that?
I think it really depends on a case by case basis, because sometimes you have historical figures that have living relatives, you know. Mm-hmm. It also depends on how long ago that historical figure existed. I mean, if you're talking about somebody that lived a good 600 years ago, mm-hmm. I mean, how much would you actually know about them, about their lives as historical fact anyway, right?
Yeah.
But if you're talking about somebody that existed 50 years ago, the chances are there is a lot of historical material where you can, which you have a lot of information to go off of. So it's hard to kind of distort that. And also if they have family living, you almost, I think legally you kind of have to seek their permission or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know about the legality of that.
No,
but
I'm not sure. I mean, in terms of, again, like I said, I've looked into, I mean, we've talked about Talwar and a lot of these real life stories. And I'm not sure in India how it works in regards to when you write a story or when you make a movie about someone's life. I don't know what obligations there is. I know, for example, there's a big controversy with Mary Kom about the fact that, you know, Priyanka Chopra got paid more for that role than Mary Kom herself ever made in her entire life. And there's also these, you know, there's a lot of issues. I mean, I remember, for example, Talwar and Rahasya, which is a podcast episode we did, both based on this true life incident, but they didn't have to get anyone's permission to talk about it, even though it's an open court case that's in appeals and things like that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of...
But then in movies like that, don't they change the names as well?
They do. Yeah. I mean, in Talwar, I mean, everyone did change names, but it's just like there's certain facts that you can't deny are exactly the same. For example, I remember Bhag Milka Bhag, which was the person that the movie was based on wrote some books. And I remember they consulted with the person who was very much involved, like Milka Singh was involved in the making of the movie. And I believe he sold the rights to his book to make the movie for, I think, like rupees of like 1 rupee or something like that. Just because he's like, I don't care about the money. I just want you to do a good job and depict me in a good light. But coming back to adaptations, I remember one thing that you mentioned. I mean, just talking about real life stories that came out, you know, in the past year. MS Dhoni, The Untold Story. I remember reading a lot of. I personally haven't seen it, but I remember you talked about it. Kathy Gibson from Access Bollywood talked about it. The fact that there's a lot of things in that movie because it is a biopic of a national hero that is very much living and in his prime today, that the character itself in the movie is boring. There's no interesting bits about the character. There's no flaws depicted.
Yeah.
There's no dark side. There's no downside of that character. And he's portrayed in the best possible light, which was one of the downfalls of the movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I feel like this is quite a... You know, it's a huge responsibility on a filmmaker to make a movie about someone that's living, but at the same time, to what extent do you go? As a filmmaker, you have a certain aesthetic, you have a certain sensibility that you want to adhere to, but at the same time, if you're making a film on someone, it's kind of, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's quite a treacherous path to tread, to be honest.
And also, like, again, like I said, like, I haven't seen MS Dhoni, but the reaction I got from everyone was the fact that when you make a story about a person, it has to be interesting for those 2 hours.
You can
show their whole life, you can show a part of their life, but it has to be a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. In a lot of these situations, that entire person's life may not be as easy to tell a story of from beginning, middle, and end. If you were to tell my story beginning, middle, to end, you would get stalled in the middle because I'm sitting here at, you know, 10 o'clock at night doing a podcast. That's not interesting. You know, so there might be, you might have to pick a window of someone's life and choose to tell a story based on that. There's a lot of character development that has to happen. And when you're limited to historical fact or, you know, this is how it happened, you can't dramatize this. It was a 2-minute conversation instead of this epic conversation. I feel like, you know, the filmmakers are very limited in what they can do with that story if they don't have a bit of artistic creativity or liberty to change things, to dramatize things or fictionalize things.
Yeah, not to mention, so another example of this is Raju Hirani is making a biopic on Sanjay Dutt, right? Yes. And apparently Raju Hirani, because he is Sanjay Dutt's friend, has agreed to not depict any of the drug use, alleged drug use, or the huge arms handling case, which led to Sanjay Dutt being in jail for half a decade. Like, how do you get away with that?
And the weird part too, that's like if the O.J. Simpson story was about his football days.
Like,
that's what, like, re- akin to that. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
As a movie watcher, I only know, the only things I know about O.J. Simpson are the fact that he got acquitted on murder charges. That's all I know about him. I don't know shit about his football career. And to be honest, if I ever watched a movie on him, I'd want to watch a movie on the whole murder thing. I wouldn't want to. Exactly,
that's
right?
That's why anyone knows his name.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
And so, I remember, I've covered the Sanjay Dutt biopic on this show a few times. And I've always wondered that Rajkumar Hirani is not a hard-hitting, gritty, realistic director. His movies have serious elements to them. Munna Bhai 3 Idiots, they've had, you know, serious turns in the third act where things get, you know, really emotional, really gripping. But when I think of a Sanjay Dutt biopic, Rajkumar Hirani is not the director I think of, because Sanjay Dutt's life has been dark and twisted and explicit and tragic.
Yes.
And I don't see Rajkumar Hirani making a movie like that. I see Rajkumar Hirani making a movie about Sanjay Dutt, the fun-loving MMA fighter and action and cool stuff and badassness. I don't want to see that in a Sanjay Dutt biopic. I've seen that in real life. I want to see the shit that I don't know about, that I haven't heard about, that I was too young to understand when it was happening. But that's, and I love that you bring that up, because that's a very good point in the situation, that how close do you want to adhere to historical facts in order to, at the expense of telling a good story? And at the end of the day, movies are stories. They're stories either based on real people, based on incidents, based on inspiration, adaptation, whatever you want to say. But it's a story that has to have a beginning, middle, and end. It has to have a compelling character. It has to have a conflict for the character to overcome. If you don't have these elements and you're just going, this is a guy, he did cool stuff, then he died, that's not a story. That's not. Exactly. No one wants to watch that.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it is.
I am oversimplifying. There have been movies like that, but you get what I'm trying to say.
No, I do get what you're trying to say. The added complication is that this is again going slightly off topic, but the added complication for a filmmaker is that there are so many other factors that kind of hinder them in India. You know, there's the whole which religious community might I inadvertently or unconsciously hurt?
And I mean, you know? And the biggest example of this situation that you just brought up was the fact that there was, and this is the most trivial instance of you know, hurting someone's sentiments, is that in the movie Rais, that just recently came out, the Shah Rukh Khan movie Rais, there's an action scene during a sort of religious march. I'm not too well educated on what it was specifically, but there's a religious ceremony where people are marching down the streets carrying banners and things like that. During that sequence, there's an action sequence where Shah Rukh Khan has to run through rooftops chasing a bad guy who tried to kill him, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a scene, there's a shot where essentially he jumps from rooftop to rooftop over a banner. A religious banner with some religious text of some sort.
Oh, God. Don't tell me people were up in arms about that.
Apparently that was offensive. It was in the trailer. And people got really pissed off, and people were upset that, you know, this is disrespectful because he's seen jumping over this thing, which, and again, I understand that. Like I said, I grew up in a Muslim household. I know there is certain things that, you know, we have very high respect for books, and, you know, you have to salam. If a book falls on the ground, you got to pick it up, you got to salam it. It's a thing. I understand that. But it's just that it's the most true. It's literally a two-second shot. And I know the filmmakers didn't lose any money removing that shot. Again, like I said, it didn't impact the grander scheme of things in any way whatsoever, but, excuse me, but it just seems like such a trivial thing that from now on, filmmakers have to be careful of that, like a 2 second shot that's barely discernible in theaters, unless you can pause and rewind, you know, when you get the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But filmmakers have to be, like, that's, I find that to be a little unreasonable and completely ridiculous. And coming back to the depiction of true life events and people, what I loved in Airlift, for example, I don't know if you've seen that movie.
No, but, I haven't seen that movie.
But that movie is based on real life events. But at the end of the movie, and this was the coolest part, I like that the filmmakers were so upfront about the fact that this was changed. At the end of the movie, there's a little thing, you know, in the end credits, you know, when they have a sum up after, you know, like, so-and-so died, so-and-so had a flower shop, right? At the end of the movie, they clearly state that the actions of two people during the real-life incident is what led to the events we saw in the film. However, Akshay Kumar's character was like a composite of those two real-life people adapted into the one character, one fictional character. And that, I swear to God, I'm not taking anything away from Airlift, but that probably impressed me more than the movie itself.
The fact that they mentioned
The fact that they were so upfront about the fact that this is a story based on real life events. However, there was two people doing these things, but for the purpose of entertainment, we just made a composite of those two people and their actions and made one character out of it, which didn't really exist, but this is what we did. And I like
that. Because we can only have one Akshay Kumar.
Of course, you can't have two people. I feel like in society, I mean, again, Hindu, Muslim, India, or otherwise, because, I mean, we do this too. Whenever there's a comic book movie, we do the exact same thing, going, well, this guy wasn't black, and they weren't going out, and we do the same BS. But I think the difference is we do it sitting here at our desks in the middle of the night on a freaking podcast, whereas in a country like India or even Bangladesh, Pakistan, whatever you want to say, there's people that are inciting violence, being disrespectful, and essentially taking things a little too far.
On a side note, don't these people have jobs? I mean, seriously, they went during the day. They went during the day and started vandalizing the sets. Don't you people have work to do? Don't you earn money? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's like I said, there's so many more things that could be at play. I mean, I've personally been witness to how crowds get whipped up into frenzies. I was in Bangladesh during that. Remember the Muslim video that came out? There's a movie on Prophet Muhammad. There's a movie about Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Like the Google released YouTube video that shut down YouTube in certain countries. There was this whole.
This
was 2011, I think. I was in Bangladesh when that happened, and YouTube was banned from Bangladesh and Pakistan, I believe, for a couple of years.
Wow.
And I remember protests in the streets of Bangladesh for this incident. And I was in traffic. Like, I was, again, firsthand impacted by this, when I'm sitting in traffic and there's literally thousands of people marching. And I'm looking at the face of these people. I'm looking at their backgrounds. I'm looking at where they come from. I'm looking at their ages. And I'm sitting here wondering, do these people even know what YouTube is to understand that someone put out a movie on a public video service site depicting their prophet in a bad light? Do they even understand that concept that they're protesting against? Because the harsh reality is a lot of people, they don't know what's going on. Some people will come and
they
say,
they just get caught up in the, you know,
Some rallying people come and say, literally say, hey, you guys want, you know, food for the day? You guys want your expenses paid for? Do you guys want to have dinner and lunch paid for today? Well, just hang out with us, move where the crowd goes, go where we tell you to do, and you'll be taken care of. It's literally like a rally. It's literally like you're just getting bodies together to show support. That's it. So, no. Some of these people, this is their job, to answer your question. But I think we've exhausted everything we could say about this topic. It's sad to see. I wish it didn't happen. I wish there was more of an understanding of the fact that, okay, at least wait for the movie.
What I do wish is that the film industry had better protection. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish there was, like, regulations or something that protected them.
I find myself, like, I know you and I talk about this all the time, I find myself always defaulting back to, what are the laws about this? What is the public, like, domain? Like, if I want to make a movie on someone's life, do I need their permission? Do I need to pay someone for their rights? You know, there's Superman has had a battle with their estate. Willy Wonka, there's battles with their estate. You know, when we talk about franchises, Sony and Spider-Man, some people own the rights, some people want to make a movie. These are things we talk about in the entertainment industry in Hollywood and North America. But in India, I keep coming back to these questions where are these laws? Are there laws against this? You know, if they went to the estate of Padmini, if she was a real-life person, or if they went to the Sabha before they made the movie and said, hey, here's how we want to tell this story. Are you guys okay with that? Is that a thing that filmmakers should be doing? Because if that's what should be happening, then they should be doing that, definitely, to avoid these situations.
Yeah.
But is there a body that regulates that? Like, is there a historical society that says, hey, anytime you want to make a movie about Mughal emperors, you got to come talk to us first, because we have all the stats and all the facts, and we want to make sure. Like, that's, like, I feel like, and again, I know in India with politics, this is a huge lack of having a governing body over all these aspects, and it's hard to do.
Yeah.
But I wish there was. And that's really all I can kind of hope and say about it.
Yeah, you know what my hope is? I just hope, and I know, I don't know what films will be produced in the future, what's going to happen, etc. But I hope that, you know, other groups aren't emboldened by this as well and try and, you know, start setting their own agendas and thinking of how they can manipulate or extort or blackmail other filmmakers.
And you know what? Like, I'll even do my part. Listen, if anyone listening to this in India or Pakistan or anywhere else in the world, because the links I sent you had some valid arguments by the other side, by people saying that this movie shouldn't be made because they're distorting the facts and things like that. And I invite, like you said, these people may not have jobs. I invite you to come on this show and rant about it, vent about
things.
Say
your piece, yeah.
Like we're doing right now. If that is the outlet you want to use, I prefer that method of protesting or you know, voicing your concern about something than to go out and you know, cause physical harm to someone or, you know, damage property or some sort of violence, you know? So feel free. Like, I feel like this is the least I could do. I mean, not that I'm saying I'm trying to do anything, but do that. That's all we do. We have jobs. You know, we have nothing better to do. It's the middle of the night. We're talking about this. So, you know, join us, you know, and leave the violence to, like, you know, to no one, hopefully. I mean, I don't want to leave violence to anyone, but MMA fighters, that's who. Leave the violence to them. All right,
as violent as it is.
Thank you so much for joining me. This has been this episode of Fiskin Podcast, where we discussed the Padmavati incident and the violence against Sonia Leela Bhansali. Sam, I want to thank you for making the time on coming.
Thank you. It's always my pleasure to come on your podcast. You know that.
I love it when you make the time. Let people know where they can get a hold of you.
So I'm on Twitter at Lipstick Patrol. That's, you know, I sound like a broken record every time I say this, but Patrol with an A.
That's how you podcast. You have to repeat certain things over. It's a whole thing. Don't worry. Just keep going.
Okay, well, so I assume people know how to spell lipstick, and it's Patrol with an A. And I write for BollyBrit.com, and you can find BollyBrit on Twitter as well, at BollyBrit.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here once again. And this was another episode of Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Leave me a review and rating. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Good, bad, hate comments. Because comments are good. Just don't incite to violence. Don't come to my house. You can follow the show on Twitter at @splitscreen_pod. You can follow me personally on Twitter at @TheShahShahid. Feel free to go on the Facebook page, BlankPageBeatdown. Facebook.com/BlankPageBeatdown. And subscribe to the site. Give me any comments. If you guys ever want to discuss anything, you want to come on the show for any reason or anything else, let me know. I'm always here. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, this is Shah Shahid signing out.
Bye.